and welcome to Backflips and Nerds, the podcast that gives you a British take on baseball. I'm your host, John McGee. Joining me this evening for a very special episode of Backflips and Nerds is Jenny Frommer, the Joint Chief Executive Officer of Baseball Softball UK, who, for those of you who don't know, are the national development agency for those two sports here in the UK. Good evening, Jenny. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm not too bad, thanks. We had a few teething problems getting going here, but we're over those, and hopefully we're going to have an interesting conversation talking all about these two fantastic sports that you and I both love, and hopefully teaching the people listening at home a little bit about your organisation and the role you play in getting eyeballs in front of it and getting people, more importantly, out on the pitch playing it.
Sounds good.
Brilliant. So let's start at the beginning, really. Baseball Softball UK, I'm aware of it. I guess that those who are out in the rec parks taking part in soft pitch softball, the National Baseball League, single A, double A, know a little bit about you. But I imagine there are a lot of people listening here who have either never heard of you, or if they have, they're not quite sure who you are and what you do. So how about we start there? Can you give us your elevator pitch about Baseball Softball UK, how many of you there are, and what it is exactly that you do?
Yes, absolutely. And I think you're right. I think a lot of people just have a bit of an idea about what we do, or don't know at all. So Baseball Softball UK has been set up as the development arm for the two national governing bodies, the one for baseball and for softball. We were originally actually set up as a kind of all-encompassing administrative arm, but from 2007, our job has been to grow the sports, and we've been focused on that since that point. We are largely funded by Sport England, and that means that Sport England can very much kind of dictate where our focus is going. And at the moment, we're about to start another four-year period, which means that our focus will change a little bit, and we'll be asked to be focusing on kind of keeping the people that are already in our sports in our sports. That said, BSUK's strategy will still be to grow the game, because we've always believed that that's the most important thing that we can do. As to how many of us there are, we have 12 full-time staff members based in different parts of the country.
And I guess that you work with other people on a part-time basis as well, coaching sessions and so on.
We work with loads of people. We have a lot of part-time coaches on our book, so to speak, and we work with external agencies and partners. Yeah, we're regularly looking for people that we can partner with. Because we're only 12 people, there's a limit to how much you can kind of get done if it's left only to your own staff.
And what exactly is the coverage of the 12 of you? Where are you geographically, and what it is in terms of, what is it, sorry, in terms of what your team covers? Are you out there on the pitches, on the fields, coaching, as well as doing marketing, pulling together budgets and plans and so on? I get the impression that maybe you're all wearing many hats.
Yeah, that's pretty accurate. I mean, when we were first set up, we were much more on the ground than we are now, and we were also a bigger staff at that point. From our kind of early inception, we decided to focus on four key areas in the UK, and we based those areas on where there was the largest population of baseball and softball being played. So we're in London, we're separately in the southeast, the Northwest and the Midlands, and we have staff in each of those areas. In more recent years, we've stopped being on the ground so much, and our job is much more to kind of orchestrate people to be working directly with players, etc., in the field.
Yeah, so it's very much a sort of hands-off governance arrangement, and you're working with people who are teaching others, you're teaching the teachers, if anything, really.
That's exactly right. We have, though, tried to maintain a balance between having staff that know the game and staff that know kind of sports development. And we're a real mix of that. And most of our staff kind of in their free time double up as volunteer coaches, etc. So you will often see BSUK staff members out there in the field, but not necessarily as part of their paid job.
Right, and what about you as the joint CEO? What does your role encompass in terms of the organisation?
Okay, we've split up the role of CEO in a sense so that one of us looks after operations and the other, my colleague John Boyd, looks after development. So I'm tasked largely with making sure that the company runs effectively. And operations covers everything from communications, events, governance, HR, risk, that kind of thing.
Right, I see. So how did you as a person become involved in the organisation? I assume that you've got some sort of background in interest in baseball and softball. I know that you play as a rec player down here in London. Was it just that brought you to the organisation?
It's kind of been a fairly long journey. I'm a dual national. I'm American and British. And I came back to the UK in 1992. And at that point, I was persuaded to get involved in playing some slow pitch softball. You're right, I'm a rec player and not a particularly good one at that.
You're better than me, Jenny. I can say that.
Thank you for that. I'd long been a baseball fan. I'd been living in the States and had kind of developed an interest in baseball. And what at some point when I was in between jobs, I got told about an opportunity of working with Major League Baseball, and I kind of followed up on that and was initially hired by them on a short-term basis. I was looking after their roadshow and their play ball leagues. And then that kind of evolved into a full-time role. And I was running the game development side of Major League Baseball in London. And Major League Baseball was pretty instrumental in the setting up of BSUK. It was the organization that could really see how the economies of scale could work if you brought these two sports together and how much more productive they could be in partnership. And so I was involved on the Major League Baseball side when BSUK was set up in 2000. And then a few years later, I was really keen to move over to, I guess, the domestic side of the game. And at that point, there were not very kind of stringent kind of hiring processes, the kinds of processes we have now. So I kind of persuaded them to take me on once they had a bit more funding and could take another staff member. And I've been here since 2002.
Gradually moving up the rungs of the ladder, I guess.
It wasn't actually that gradual. I kind of came in, my job was to look after baseball. And then a few years later, my father, who was the CEO, decided to step back into a consultancy role, and that's when we kind of created the joint CEO arrangement.
Fantastic. So you said you'd worked with MLB. I was going to come on to this a little later on, but we'll strike when the iron's hot. Mm-hmm. Obviously, for baseball fans here in the UK, we've all been quite excited over the last 3 to 6 months about some of the noise that's been coming out of the States about the way that MLB is taking a handle of the UK market. So what is your relationship at BSUK with the MLB now? I believe you actually share an office, is that right?
We do share an office. It's their office, and they have let us be based here since we were first set up. It's interesting timing for your question, because actually Major League Baseball are shortly to move out of this office, which means that we will too after 17 years. The timing is interesting. I mean, effectively, I would say we work in partnership. We've had a real advantage, I guess, over some of our European counterparts in that we can work so directly with Major League Baseball. And we've done a number of things together, whether it's hosting of the European Big League Tour back in 2012 or running promotional events around the $1 million arm, or there's a whole list of things we've done together. And I think the fact that we get to work so closely in partnership was also what allowed us to access a Baseball Tomorrow Fund grant, which helped us with the building of Farnham Park. So it's been a really close working relationship, and a lot of benefit has come from that. And I guess one of the most critical things they've done for us is provided us a really low-cost office for a very long time.
And how is that at the moment? Has that changed in terms of intensity, in terms of focus over the last sort of 6 months since I think it's not a secret that they've increased their staff in London, clearly with a view to doing something, if not having games here. Has that sort of become more of a part of your job working with them, or has it stayed the same, or has it sort of just changed in terms of its optics?
I think for the moment, it's actually been quite quiet in terms of how we work together. Major League Baseball is very much trying to move into a different way of working. And one of their focuses at this point is really on insight around the baseball fans across Europe, Middle East and Africa, which is the territory that the office here looks after. We've talked a lot about what we may do a little bit further down the road, but they're very much in a kind of figuring out stage in terms of how they will operate.
That's really interesting. And just whilst we're on relationships, I'll speak a little about Farnham Park in a moment, but how about GB Baseball and the British Baseball Federation? For those who are casual observers, they're probably getting lost in terms of looking at the different acronyms that are at play here. How does your organisation interplay with those organisations too?
Mm. You're right, there are a lot of acronyms. And I think one of the things we hope is that one day maybe there would just be one organisation to represent both sports. When we were set up in 2000, and I had said at the start that we were kind of set up as an administrative arm at that point, both of the GB teams, GB Baseball and GB Softball, sorry, when I say teams, I really mean programs, came under Baseball Softball UK. And in 2007, we had a real kind of review of all of the ways that we worked, and we made a choice to move to being a development agency, and we kind of separated out the various parts of what we all did. And at that point, the federations were sort of more formally codified as being under the two federations. So we don't have a formal role with either program, but we have a really critical role in the sense that we run the player development pathway. We run the academy and the high performance academy that most of their players are coming through. We also are the body that interacts externally. So we would be the people that would talk to UK Sport or the BOA or, you know, the ESF and the WBSC. In the case of our European and world federations, not exclusively, that's a conversation that the federations also have. But we have a lot more capacity to interact externally.
And how is that? In terms of liaison with Sport England, with UK Sport and with other organisations like that, getting funding, trying to find successes, the players and so on, is it through the High Performance Academy? What keeps you going? It strikes me as quite thankless. You know, you and I are both fans, obviously, but let's be honest, this is always going to be a minority sport here in the UK. Is it the passion that keeps you going and keeps the team going, or is it, you know, those few successes that we do find every now and again?
I think that's exactly it. I mean, you're right that at times it can feel, I don't know if thankless is the word, but it can be a battle. It's a battle to secure funding. It's a battle to fight for the profile of our sports or the importance of our sports. And sometimes it's a battle even with the membership of our sport so that they have some understanding of what it is that we do. And I think you're exactly right. One of the things that keeps me personally going is that I love both these sports, and I'm really grateful that I've been able to work within them for so long. And you're right, for all the kind of few successes that there are, the ones that we have are so incredibly meaningful. For me, one of the big ones would have been the Olympics, it being played in London in 2012. And that really, for me, caused quite a big crisis of faith when our sports were removed. But other things that, you know, make it all worthwhile are things like the opening of Farnham Park or hosting the EBLT or seeing the under-18 women and girls fast pitch team getting gold in Europe last year, and more recently watching GB Baseball beat Brazil in the WBCQ. These are the kinds of things that make it kind of all worthwhile.
Yeah, and we'll go on to your ambitions and the organization's ambitions for even more of that, hopefully. But just sort of picking up on one you mentioned there and that we've mentioned already during the course of this chat, I think one of the crowning achievements of your organisation, for those with more than a passing knowledge of what it is that you do, is Farnham Park, which for those who are listening who've never been there, I would implore you to go and have a look. And you will be absolutely gobsmacked at the quality of baseball and softball facility that we have in this country. Unfortunately, it's only one, and only one for the time being. We'll come on to that in a minute. But how did that come about, and how important is it to the building of the game, particularly here in the Southeast, for you and your team?
I mean, the short answer to how it came about is that we fought really hard in the lead up to the 2013-17 funding cycle. We fought to be able to bid to apply and receive capital funding. And capital funding is the funding that Sport England makes available for facilities. We put together a 5-year facilities plan, and we argued our case, basically. And we brought in a sizable grant from the Baseball Tomorrow Fund as a matched fund in order to kind of demonstrate that we could also contribute to a project like this. So it was a real fight, and it's taken a long time to be kind of finally completed. I think this year you will see that there's the final and fourth field that we're opening at Farnham Park. And we're also about to open a clubhouse there, which will mean that our sports will actually have a home, their own clubhouse, when they play in events and tournaments at Farnham Park.
It's fantastic. And how important do you feel it is? I mean, is this facility going to allow baseball or softball at an international standard to be played in the UK? Is it going to help, for example, the national teams representing the UK in European tournaments at club level to be able to get better, use better facilities and so on?
I think the answer is a bit of all of the above. We have already hosted international events at Farnham Park. We've run a fast pitch London Cup for the last 2 years that invited teams from other parts of Europe to come and compete, and the GB women played alongside those teams. And we last year we saw the London Mets, which is a baseball club, host a SEEB qualifying tournament at Farnham Park. So you're exactly right. It allows us to host international events. It does provide a high quality venue, which I think will help with the development of players. And it makes us more credible. I think it's part of a number of things that we do to show that our sports can stand shoulder to shoulder with other sports. I think when all of your playing fields are basically converted football fields, it takes away from the importance of your sport.
Yeah, absolutely. And having played on some of those converted football fields, I can say also it's definitely that which causes me to be an absolutely lamentable third baseman, and not my distinct lack of any ability whatsoever.
Absolutely.
So Farnham Park is there. It's going to have, as of this year, 4 pitches and a clubhouse. The question, therefore, is where next? Where's the next Farnham Park? A lot of us based here in London, it's near enough that we can use it. Everyone else in the Southeast can use it. And I guess if you were at a push and you were in Manchester and you were in Liverpool and you wanted to host a international team, you could use it too. But what about those guys? What about the guys up north or in the Southwest or in Scotland? Is there anything in the pipeline for them?
It's always been our plan that after we opened a London or Southeast based facility, that we would look to the north. And we've been working over the past few years quite closely with Manchester City Council and the FA to be part of a multi-sport development. The next step for us is to get clarity on when and what we can apply for. So we've done a lot of groundwork so that we should be able to turn our attention to opening a northern facility. I mean, there are a lot of things that have to fall into place for that to happen, and obviously the most important one is lining up the funding. For us, it's always been important to focus facilities in areas where there's already a large playing population. We used the opening of Farnham Park to also develop players, to grow the game effectively, set up new teams, but it would never have been successful if it hadn't already been an important kind of hub for play.
And I guess that as you mentioned, the North, I know from my own personal experience as someone who's going to be moving to Manchester in just over a month's time, that there's quite a strong base, particularly on the slow pitch side, already up in that region. So it makes sense, I guess, to be there. And is that part of a broader plan? Is that just sort of stage two in terms of a 10, 15 year plan to sort of raise that floor? Because if I understand rightly from the research that I've done and the conversations I've had with people, we're somewhere below, say, Italy, Germany and the Netherlands, for example, in terms of the quality of the facilities that they have. Is your ambition, essentially, Jenny, to sort of be getting up to that, excuse the pun, playing field with those guys?
I think it absolutely is our ambition. I mean, I think there's different ways in which we've already closed that gap, in that our playing numbers, and all of us count both baseball and softball playing numbers when we report on this, is higher than a number of those countries, and we're very close to being the largest playing population in Europe. Obviously, when you break that down, we have a much larger slow pitch population than most of those countries do. But yes, I mean, I think the end game or the end goal always has to be to keep raising the bar. And like I said before about sitting shoulder to shoulder with other sports, you also want to try and sit shoulder to shoulder with your European counterparts. I think all of that is part of seeing the UK develop their baseball and softball players and their baseball and softball facilities.
Just sort of turning that through a few degrees, I know that you were out in Brooklyn for the World Baseball Classic qualifier, and I know that a lot of the people who listen to the podcast were tuned in at home to watch that game against Brazil, and indeed the unfortunate loss to Israel, as I was myself. At the time, we ran a couple of pieces and we had a few conversations with people on Twitter about the makeup of that team being, and I'll sort of paraphrase here, not particularly British. Mm-hmm. I kind of wanted to get your view on whether that was a sort of means to an end. I think Liam, the coach of the GB team, sort of felt that getting the best product on the field was the right thing with a longer term view in mind. As the person who's sort of responsible for developing young people, and this isn't pointing a finger in any way, shape or form, what's your view on that?
I guess my starting point is I fully agree with Liam. I think the best product on the field raises the bar generally. I also think it's not where we are in terms of our development. We don't yet have the players that could fill a GB team successfully. And I think it's important always to put the most credible team on the field that you can. I think that's what increases opportunities. It's what will lead ultimately to our being able to develop more British-born players who will earn their place on merit over time. I mean, there already are a number of British-born players on the squad and on the team. But I think it's critical that you put out the best team that you can. I think those are the kinds of decisions that gain you access to Olympic qualification or to European competition in a way that just putting out a team that was entirely comprised of British-born players wouldn't do at this point.
Yeah, I think that's an argument that I personally think is absolutely right. I was just interested to see if it was one that you shared. One of the guys who was in that squad, and you touched on the fact there were some British-born players, is a guy called Richard Klein, who I have a particular interest in because he's from the same place that I am. And I have to say that I didn't know that baseball was a thing that existed around my neck of the woods when I was a kid up in the Lake District. But it also shows, I guess, the geographic coverage that we've got when you've got one of the elite players in the GB squad who's GB-born from there. And then last year's champions, the Southampton Mustangs, are right at the other end of England, at least. Is that geographic coverage important to you? You said that you go to places where there's a large base and you concentrate on them, but what about those places that you didn't mention, so Newcastle, Hull, Scotland? How do you seek to get to them, if you do at all?
I think you're right that geographic spread is critically important to us. I mean, one of the things we've always believed is that it's easier to grow something where it can be based around local play. And that the more that you can do that, the more successful you'll be in getting more people to play our sports. As a minority sport, one of the key things you want to do is remove barriers rather than add additional obstacles that mean that only the most committed potential players will access our sports. I think in terms of how we grow beyond the areas that I've talked about are concentrating in, we take opportunities where they come up. I mean, everything is dependent on resources. And again, it goes back to being a small staff. But where we can work with potential clubs or teams that are setting up outside of those four key areas, we absolutely will do that. I think more and more we want to see our two sports spread all across the country. I think that's what will make the switch from our being a kind of minority sport to being a more important sport here.
Great. I fully agree. I'm just sort of looking past the facilities question, which is very difficult to fix. And unfortunately towards another rather tough nut to crack. I know that the window is still open for you and colleagues in terms of bidding for Olympic funding for the Games in 2020, which will be in Tokyo, where baseball and softball will be on the agenda. How hopeful are you as a team that you're going to be able to make a strong enough case to UK Sport that the men's team in baseball and the women's fast pitch team and some of the other teams who you were hopeful of sending out there to Tokyo to get that experience go through qualifying? How hopeful are you that that's going to come through?
The honest answer is I'm not very hopeful at all. I'm fully confident that we have made the case and can continue to make the case that we have the potential to qualify. But I think, as you've already seen from the funding awards that were made in December, UK Sport are concentrating their resources on fewer sports rather than more. And I think it's going to be a really tough battle. I think there's still an open question, though, about how UK Sport deals with 2020 sports, and we're one of five, because we are a different animal in that way. And with all the other sports that they either fund or have considered funding, they've had a long relationship with them and a long time to understand what it is that their sports can potentially do. And while we've made quite a compelling case and they've acknowledged that for the possibility of qualification, they also acknowledge the need to really work with us over the next year to understand how robust our argument is.
I guess that, I think when this was reported, it was sort of seen in the baseball community and the softball community here in the UK as something of a stay of execution. But it sounds like UK Sport are going to give you, if nothing else, every opportunity for you to educate them as to the quality of the players in your programs, the quality of the programs themselves, indeed, and you know, the journey that you and the team are going on. So I guess that's a positive, right?
It is a positive. I mean, I did start by saying I'm not very hopeful, and I genuinely am not very hopeful. I think, you know, we've already seen sports cut that UK Sport is well aware have a very strong case for potentially being able to medal. And I therefore think it's not that likely that they're going to stretch their resources as far down in a way as our sports. But I think what we've always...
Should just tell them that the USA and Japan and the Dominican Republic are not very good. I think that should be part of your case.
The weird thing is they actually check this. and to be fair to them, I would say that their analysts are incredibly good. I think it's just I'm saying this badly, but I think the decisions that UK Sport have taken, which is sort of publicly known as their no compromise approach, means that it's very unlikely that they will fund additional sports. And I think our hope is that if we can't access funding, that we can access some of the resources that support national teams, whether that's kind of sports medicine and psychologists, etc. And I think what we really need to key on is this window that the 2020 sports have that's small and potentially won't be repeated, and not wasting that window. So I think our argument kind of goes in a different route than the traditional sports.
I see that. And in terms of feasibility, would it be at all possible for you to send a team out to the Olympics without that backing? Is it just completely out of the question, or would you be reliant on a sugar daddy, the MLB, as they do with the World Baseball Classic, for example, to be paving that way for you?
It's a good question, and I don't really have a good answer to it. I mean, I think it's an incredibly expensive thing to send a full team or full teams out to Tokyo to compete. And I think the answer is probably in your question, which is that, yeah, we would be, I mean, we would kind of leave no stone unturned, but I think it would really require someone making a donation or some level of sponsorship that we have not so far accessed.
One of the avenues that I mentioned there was getting the MLB to help you. And on that front, perhaps timing is opportune. We had the conditional bargaining agreement come out in December, stating unequivocally in black and white, black letter print, that MLB is going to bring games to London, maybe as soon as 2018. Maybe as part of the negotiations, you can put that on the table. See if Rob Manfred buys it. We'll only let you come to London if you'll pay for our team to go to Tokyo. But sort of placing that silliness aside, I guess you and your team are as excited at that prospect as everybody else, right?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, it's actually, before it was actually put into the CBA, for a few years now, it's been a possibility. And I think our team has been excited for a long time at that happening. And I think it's felt quite like it's something we keep waiting for. But you're right, having it actually stated as part of the CBA really re-engages us all in that possibility.
How do you feel about everything that surrounds it? Obviously, as a fan of the sport, you're going to enjoy going to the games, but how do you feel it will have an impact on UK baseball? Do you think it's absolutely paramount? Can we get the development that we want to in terms of engaging young people and new fans without it? And how do we make the most of that chance if and when it does come along?
One of the things that MLB has done always when they've taken games overseas, so Sydney was the last example of this, is they have quite critical requirements about the kind of development that they need to see the home country do around the game, which from our point of view is entirely the right approach. And so when the first possibility of a game was slated for 2016, we were already working on that, from quite a few years before, and looking at the things that could be developed around possible sites for the game. And I think it for us, it's something that would absolutely be an opportunity to raise the profile both of baseball and softball. And I think we'd find that a lot of the people that would be interested in seeing a game in London would actually come from softball.
And in terms of what you guys would like to see happening, obviously you would be hoping for some support for BSUK or working alongside MLB for player development. But what else? What else do you think that they need? Is it player appearances like we see when the NFL comes here? Is it what's happened with the Australian Baseball League, for example, where there's been quite a strong focus on legacy in terms of building up those teams? Some of those teams have very good relationships with some of the MLB teams, for example, where their prospects are playing out in the ABL. And if you watch some of those games, as I do occasionally of a weekend morning, the quality is quite good. Is that something they could do, working with the NBL teams, for example?
I think that's potentially something they could do. One of the things that they're most interested in working with us on is setting up new programs, new kids and adults programs around the games, and specifically around the areas in which they would hold the games. And that's something we have already done a lot of groundwork for. I mean, I think it's the kind of massive profile event that potentially drives people to try a sport. It's the same thing that the Olympics would have done if they had been in London. And I think it's one of those things that come along that you absolutely have to take the opportunity to build something sustainable around. What you don't want to do is just kind of do something for the period when the MLB circus, so to speak, is in town, and then it doesn't really have any legacy impact. And I think we would explore all the ways in which that could help. They could help our sports here. But I think what's clear is they would really want to see grassroots programs coming from that, and that fits very well with how we always approach things too.
Great. I mentioned player appearances there. I wanted to pick up on a comment that Jason Holowaty from the MLB team in London, who I know you know quite well, made in the podcast that we did with him at the back end of last year about the importance of Didi Gregorius and Max Kepler, and to a slightly lesser extent Donald Lutz, have made to the programs that he's run on the European mainland in terms of getting young kids interested in the game. I know these guys are Dutch and German, but is there not something that we can do here in the UK using those guys, saying, look, you know, Europeans have gone on to be credible major leaguers, or do we need our own Max Kepler? And do we need the BSU High Performance Academy to be turning out that guy?
I think the answer is both. In terms of how, in terms of using Didi Gregorius and Max Kepler and potentially others, I think the question is how best to use them. I think there's no doubt that for young players on the talent pathway, they're very aware that there are European players who have made it to the major leagues, and that's something that's quite important in terms of keeping them interested in being on that path. I think there's no question that if there was a GB player who was an everyday player in the major leagues, that would be a game changer. And so I think there's a question around the best use you can make of having European players that are in the majors, and what exactly we would do with that at this point.
Right, and just sort of coming back to the point we made earlier about the team in the World Baseball Classic, I guess it doesn't matter if that's Champ Stewart or Jordan Serena, right? If they're the GB everyday player.
No, I completely agree, yeah.
Moving on from, well, not from the land of the MLB, but from the land of baseball development and baseball and softball here in the UK, I know that you yourself, Jenny, are a huge New York Yankees fan. Mm-hmm. Insert boo here, people at home. So before we end this chat, I just wanted to spend a couple of minutes going over your views as to what might be coming up next year. So what are your expectations for 2017? Are they in line with, you know, what everyone else thinks, that this could be a bit of a transitional Yankees team?
I'm not entirely sure what my expectations are. I mean, we're a really weird team at this point, in that we're, you know, we kind of accelerated our rebuilding plan that I thought would take longer. And so we have, you know, this a number of exciting new players. We have a really good back end of the rotation, of the bullpen, but we don't have pitching, and that's such a huge gap. So I kind of don't know what we're going to look like. And I think we are a few years away from having kind of completed this rebuild. I think, honestly, I've always assumed we were trying to get to the point where we could be picking up players like Bryce Harper or Matt Harvey once they hit free agency. But it's been really exciting watching the change and seeing us actually develop a farm system and having prospects. I mean, that's not something that I've really had the luxury of seeing for a very long time.
And is there anyone amongst that set, you know, the ones that you got for cashing in the back end of your bullpen, which you immediately bought back in the summer in classic Yankees fashion? Are there any of those young players who you particularly like the look of, the likes of Torres and Frazier and Dylan Tate?
Yeah, I mean, I've never been an expert on the kind of prospect side of the game. There's a way in which, because I watch all of the Yankees games, there's a limit to how much kind of more bandwidth I have for that. But yeah, absolutely, I'm interested in seeing what those players look like. I read something recently that Brian Cashman was kind of implying that there was no question that they would not play this year. But it feels like from what I've been reading on Torres particularly, it wouldn't surprise me if we saw them in kind of July, August, particularly Torres, who sounds like he's had a quite amazing winter.
Yeah, it certainly seems like he has. And you know, as a Red Sox fan, it kind of pains me to see those guys down in New York having all of the super prospects. When if you'd asked any Red Sox fan or any evaluator 2 months ago, you had all of the super prospects, it would have been up in the top corner of Northeast America. But yeah, you know, we've got Chris Sale, so that's not bad either.
No, absolutely. I mean, you have the team on the field. You are kind of, and I know you won't like this, you're kind of the new Yankees. You have the team on the field, but you've kind of depleted your farm system a bit to, not to get there exactly, but your focus is very much on the team you've got now. I'm always a little bit uncomfortable when I say you or we, as if I, you know, as if any of us have any kind of contribution.
If you're in the clubhouse, yeah. I know what you mean. So when is it? When do you think we're going to see the next Yankees dynasty? To coin it in the standard American way, is it going to be after 2018 when you pick up Bryce Harper and Matt Harvey and Manny Machado? Is it going to be the evil empire returning then to take on the Chris Sale led Red Sox?
I would love the answer to be yes, but I'm not sure I actually believe that there will ever be a Yankees dynasty again. I think I don't know, I think it's evened out far too much, and I don't think the fact that the Yankees can spend a lot of money is now a difference maker. I think we're not the only team that can, and we can't actually even spend as much as the Dodgers at this point. So I think that we can see a period where the Yankees will be better. It wouldn't shock me if they then went ahead and you know, used all of the talent they've built up to bring in free agents. But yeah, I'm not sure I expect to ever see quite the same dynasty again, although I would be very happy to do so.
There you have it. We are coming to the end of our conversation, I think, on a downer, which we do so often on this podcast, but it's not the one I thought. If you'd said to me, perhaps we won't get Olympic funding, it might be 5 to 10 years before we've got the first GB baseball star in the MLB, I'd have worn that, but there'll never be another Yankees dynasty. Whilst it warms my own heart, it's a shocking revelation, Jenny, for you to end on, I think.
I'm not sure I can quite claim a revelation. It's just my outlook on it, but I appreciate that.
All that remains, I guess, is for me to thank you for your time, Jenny. If anyone wants to know anything more about Baseball Softball UK as an organisation, how would they go about getting hold of that information? Where can they find you on the internet, on Twitter and so on?
Oh, I'm so ill prepared for this kind of thing. Our website is bsuk.com, and if anyone goes to our website, they will find the links to our Twitter feed and our Facebook pages, etc. And anyone is welcome to contact me or the other staff who are all listed on our website.
Great. I think your Twitter is at bsuk, so I can pick that one up for you. And what about you, Jenny? Are you on Twitter if we should wish to follow you and hear more about how good this Yankees team is going to be about after 2018?
I am on Twitter, and I believe my handle is Jay Fromer. And you're right, I do mostly only tweet about the Yankees or whatever BSUK is up to.
Well, those are both things that I think lots of the people listening to us this evening will want to hear about. And of course, for those of you who've never listened to this before, who have picked this up from somewhere else, we're on Twitter too. We're at batflips_nerds. We're also on Facebook. Find us at facebook.com/batflipsandnerds. If you are listening to this through iTunes, then please leave us a rating. It really helps people find the show. We've been getting a lot of traffic through there through doing that, and we really appreciate those of you who've taken the time to do that, as I know Jenny has. So follow after Jenny and leave us a rating. So that's all we've got time for this week. We'll have another podcast for you around the same time next week, where we'll be completely changing the subject entirely, and we'll be talking to Dave Kaufman, who is one of the people who runs the campaign to bring the Montreal Expos back to Montreal, and ran alongside Jonah Kerry the campaign to get Tim Raines into the Hall of Fame, and he did all of that from his new base here in London. So we'll be hearing from Dave next week, and thanks to Jenny for your time this week. Goodbye, Jenny.
Bye, and thank you for having me.
Thanks.